J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
There's easy answers to things, but no one thinks of them. Illegal immigration, now Arizona's going crazy. We don't have to build walls. We don't even have to make laws. I say we turn illegal immigration into a reality show where we vote people in and we vote people out. Americans would get involved then. Then they'd care. And because I think we can all agree, there's a lot of illegal immigrants that are already here that work really hard, and we would like it if they stayed. And I think we can also all agree, there's a lot of Americans that haven't really panned out. So we just start voting, and then Ryan Seacrest can announce the results at the end of American Idol. He'll be like, joining us this week is Juan Gonzalez. He's been hiding in a garage in Buffalo for 11 and a half years, but apparently he's an eye doctor. Leaving us this week, she has 8 new babies and 6 she already couldn't afford. Say goodbye to the Octomom, America.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
It is Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. How you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. Apologies about yesterday. What happened is, I've talked about this before. The computer sometimes will sit a good chunk of the weekend. It gets a real workout during the week, and then I do the oldie show on Sunday. That's pre-recorded. And so sometimes I don't touch the computer much between Friday when I get off the air and Sunday night or Monday when we crank things back up and do a radio show again. And I don't know what happens to the computer over the weekend, but it starts to show signs of lack of cooperation. And a lot of times it won't let me know that it's not going to cooperate on that particular day until I turn on the microphone and try to start doing a show on Monday morning, and then all hell breaks loose. Well, we got a show cranked out, but then when I was trying to do the podcast, this system had to be completely rebooted and readjusted and all that sort of stuff. So now it's like quarter after 11 and I'm just now seeing the opportunity to start recording. And I'm like, well, by the time I finish this, it's going to be 1 o'clock in the afternoon. You know what? Screw it. Let's just take the day off and give you a much better podcast the next day, which happens to be today, Tuesday, March 26th, as we said. And so here we go. I don't think it was too bad in St. Louis, but the iHeart Radio Group owns 6 radio stations in St. Louis. None of them, as far as I can tell, were affected yesterday, but more massive layoffs. Somebody said to me, JC, you've been down there in Florida for 4.5 years. Why don't you get a gig there? And there's a couple of answers to that. First of all, I got a gig here. I do the podcast, do the radio show. That actually keeps me pretty busy. But the bigger answer is, I have been here 4.5 years. I haven't seen a single job opportunity in the Tampa Bay market in that 4.5 years. Not one. I've seen a lot of guys and women get laid off, but I haven't seen them say, hey, we have this wonderful job opportunity for this wonderful radio station. Even bad radio stations, I haven't seen any job opportunities. It's all about cutting. It's the way corporate America looks at things. It's like, okay, you have 60 employees. Surely you could do the job with 50. So we're going to have 10 layoffs here and go to work. Now you're doing it with 50. And then they come back the next year. You did it pretty good with 50. Nice job. Surely you can do it with 40. And you see where this is going. Last summer, I went to surprise a couple of people at one of the major radio stations in St. Louis. Still have a lot of friends there. And I figured I'm just going to pop in and surprise them. And I came in, I don't know, it was something like 2:30 in the afternoon on a Friday. There was one person in the building. One. 6 radio stations were on autopilot. Either automation, syndicated programming, or just something that didn't require anybody to be there because the automation had taken over. This is where this business is headed. I can only be thankful that I was in the business while it was still fun. You know, I got in professionally in the early to mid 1970s, and then the 80s were just a riot, and the 90s were pretty good too, and even the first part of the 2000s weren't so bad when we took that job over at K-Hits doing the morning show. But right after that, man, I know people who worked in radio back during that period, and even now, who don't really have their cubicle or their little work area sort of fixed up, you know, because it's nice when you can put up some pictures of family or maybe your dog or just something that makes it feel sort of homey. By the way, there was one radio station manager back in the 90s who referred to what you could put up in your cubicle as approved artwork. She had to come around and inspect your cubicle and make sure that any pictures you put up were to her pleasure. If she looked at it and said, oh, take that down, that's ugly, or something like that, you had to take it down. I noticed nobody ever went in her fucking office and said the same thing to her. Who's that ugly son of a bitch? That's my son. Well, take it down. You know, you never got anything like that. But she could do that to you. Put up a picture of a peace sign. Oh, we don't want any of that hippie stuff in here. Take that down. But anyhow, back to the point I was trying to make. Yeah, you have a little cubicle or something, so you put up some pictures, try to make it sort of homey, because you're going to be there for the next 8 to 9 hours, so at least make the experience comfortable. There's a lot of people who don't do that anymore. You know why? Because they don't want to go through the humiliation of having to watch all of their fellow, soon-to-be former coworkers witnessing you carrying boxes of stuff out to your car when you get whacked. That's how dismal, it's how bleak this whole thing is. So I jumped off of the corporate bandwagon. We have a nice little radio station now in K-Wolf at 101.5 and 101.7. And we stream at kwolf.com, and we play rock and we play Americana, and we play very few commercials compared to the big corporate guys. So if you get a chance, check it out. Again, 101.5 St. Louis, 101.7 West, and streaming at kwolf.com. We'll be on smart speakers very, very soon. Pizza Hut running a $12 pizza promotion for the big eclipse next month, and they're calling it, are you ready? Total Eclipse of the Hut. Oh, man. The Boeing CEO stepping down. The news comes after their stock price plummeted faster than their detached airplane doors. Young people in China refusing to dress up for work. They're wearing pajama bottoms to the office. Canada is an interesting country. I used to live 12 miles from the Canadian border. That's it, 12 miles. And thus, 12 miles from Niagara Falls. I went to Niagara Falls all the time. You know, the people their whole lives, it's been on their bucket list. It's like, oh man, you know, it's not exactly the most convenient location. A lot of people not finding any reason to go to Buffalo for any other reason. So it's not like, hey, while we're in Buffalo, let's go see Niagara Falls. You're not going into Buffalo in the first place. And there's a lot of people who don't really do international travel. You should, because Toronto and Vancouver are two of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen. And our pal Eric Mink, who I just talked to yesterday, by the way, he's doing great. He used to be one of the judges in one of these huge media competitions. And they're going to have it every year in Banff, Canada, which is way, way over in the western part of the country. And at the foothills, and he showed me these pictures, just absolutely breathtaking. Totally breathtaking. I remember I did the When Harry Met Sally film junket for the media. That was in Vancouver. And I was blown away by that city. Now I understand that's changed a lot. And it's really been taken over, for lack of a better way of saying it, by a lot of Asians who came over and repopulated there. And not that that would necessarily bother a lot of people, but it would some. But it sure is pretty. You get up in the morning and you look out of your hotel, and there's a mountain coming out of the water. Very, very cool. That city, you know, had a bit of an Austin, Texas vibe to it, but just much, much bigger and much more picturesque. If you like bananas and you like to buy them from Trader Joe's, look out. Here comes a 21% bump in cost. It's only 4 cents. 19 cents to 23 cents, but a lot of Trader Joe's people are freaking out. With all the talk about immigration, how many places do you think there are where you can legally cross the border between the United States and Mexico? 3, 5, 10, 15? Try 50. There are 50 places where you can legally cross the border between the United States and Mexico. I will never forget this date in 1984. And I mention this because it was 1982 that groundbreaking ceremonies took place in Washington, D.C. for the Vietnam War Memorial. 200-foot black granite walls with the names of Americans killed or missing in the war. I think it's about 56 or 58,000, if my memory serves me correctly. And it was just dumb luck. It was the last weekend that I would be living in Washington, D.C., because I was moving from Washington to Buffalo. Believe it or not, it was a career move. And it was that job in Buffalo. They got me the job in St. Louis, and the rest, as they say, is history. So anyhow, it's my last weekend in Washington, D.C., and I had never gotten around to seeing the monuments. You know, Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument. You know, all that stuff. I never did take the White House tour. Never been in the White House. Lived there for like a year and a half and never got on the White House tour. John Hewlett. John Hewlett went on the White House tour. And they bring you right to the edge of the Oval Office. And there's a like a velvet rope there. You can sort of look inside. You know, if the president's there, obviously you can't look inside. But it was one of those days where the president was gone, and John just took his foot and stuck it underneath the velvet rope and just sort of put his foot on the carpet of the Oval Office. And a Secret Service guy came over and said, if you do that again, you're gone and maybe arrested. You, man. Oh, man. But anyhow, so it was that last weekend in Washington, D.C. in the spring of 1984, and it just happened to be the weekend that they were opening the Washington Vietnam War Memorial. And there were thousands. And I don't mean 3,000 or 5,000. I'm talking about probably 20,000 people that descended on Washington, D.C. for the grand opening of the War Memorial. And just a lot of army fatigues, a couple of people in military uniform, lots of families, obviously families of men and women that had fallen during the Vietnam War. And what you do is you take a piece of paper and then you put it up against the name of the person that you're remembering, and you take something and you sort of rub the outside of the paper. And what it does, it leaves the imprint of the inscription on the wall with your loved one's name on it. It transfers it to the paper. And so a lot of people figured out how to do that, and a lot of people were doing it. And you, like I said, just dumb luck. It was also the day that they were shooting the Washington, D.C. scenes of the movie Silkwood. And Meryl Streep and Cher were right there. I was watching them film the movie. Like I always say, if you ever watched a movie being made, it is the most unexciting thing ever. I mean, it might be sort of a thrill because you've never seen one made before and now you are seeing one, and so that's exciting. But when it comes right down to it, it's really dull and boring, and it cured me of ever wanting to be an actor in movies. It was 1980 in Tampa Bay, Florida, and in the middle of the night, some sort of barge or something crashed into the support beams holding up the Sunshine Bridge. And the bridge goes down. It was foggy. People are driving along southbound on the bridge. Zoom, zoom, zoom. One after another, right off the end of the bridge, not having any idea that it had been knocked out. I think 30 people lost their lives. And I do remember seeing stories about some people who figured out what was going on, hit the brakes at the last second, and then ran out of their cars trying to wave people down who were about to die. And they're waving their arms, stop, stop, stop. And people just zooming along like, what the hell is his deal? And within seconds, they were dead. Can you even imagine what was going through their minds in those final seconds? Like, I guess we should have paid attention to him. Similar situation in Baltimore overnight, 1:30 in the morning. And this ship is enormous, by the way. And it took out the bridge supports, and we got a bunch of people missing. I think right now they said 20. We're finding out now that the ship alerted officials to some sort of power issue before they hit the bridge. Now, There's tremendous loss of life. But if you know anything about Baltimore, and I do a little bit because I used to live near there, as I was saying, there's not a lot of ways in and out of Baltimore. There's some tunnels. They can handle a limited capacity of cars. But this bridge we're talking about, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and by the way, if you were out with Mono or something when they were teaching about Francis Scott Key, the guy who wrote the national anthem, that's who that is. So the bridge is named after him. And they actually have video of this because they have some sort of, you know, like security camera or something. And you see this ship hitting the bridge and you see the bridge just completely collapsing and going into the water. So they immediately brought out the sonar and they're like, yep, there's a lot of cars sitting at the bottom of the drink. But anyhow, back to the logistical issues. So now I think it cuts it down to only those two tunnels that allow you to get in and out of Baltimore, Maryland. And until they can rebuild the bridge, I don't know. What do? You set up a bunch of ferries? But, I mean, they're talking about 30,000 cars a day that use that bridge. I think the Poplar Street Bridge, for example, and by the way, this would be like the Poplar Street Bridge going out. But the Poplar Street Bridge, I think, handles about 50,000 cars a day. This one in Baltimore, about 30,000. So, you know, just imagine, you know, you live in Illinois, you got to come into St. Louis every day for work or something. And so now you got to find that alternate route, that other way of getting in and out of St. Louis. Somebody told me something a real long time ago, and I have not been able to Google this and get an answer, but maybe you know, because I don't even know if it's true. But somebody told me that if you could knock out just two bridges, or maybe it's three, it's either two or three bridges in Missouri, just two or three bridges, the entire state of Missouri would become, in essence, an island with an inability to get in or out of the state of Missouri. Could that be possible? Now, that was before the Musial Bridge was put in, so maybe it's three or four now. But just imagine some enemy or something comes in, bombs the Poplar Street Bridge, bombs the Musial Bridge. Well, then they'd have to go into South County. So there's three right there. And there's bridges on the Kansas City side of things. Maybe that's four. But I don't seem to remember the number even being that high. Because I remember when the guy told me, I was like, what? I think he said two. Now, again, that was before the Musial Bridge. So let's just say three. You wouldn't be able to get in and out of the state of Missouri. So if somebody is aware of that little piece of information, let me know. Email it to me, jc@jcontheline.com, or go to my Facebook page, The Showgram with JC Corcoran, and leave me a message, because I need to know if that's true. You know, I used to be like everybody else. I used to ridicule the survivalists, and to some extent I still do, because if you're, you know, putting together a stockpile of guns and you get enough food for the Fifth Army to last you for 10 years. I mean, there's some people that go really overboard with it, and they got bomb shelters, and they can live in something that they built underground for 6 months. You know, when you're going to that length, yeah, then I think you're starting to get into a weird area. You always get the idea that some of those people are sort of hoping that something catastrophic happens so they get a chance to use all this stuff they built. But I'll be honest, I ain't laughing anymore. I think the next thing the terrorists are going to come after is the power grid, the internet, or the water supply, something like that. And there's a lot of things you can do and a lot of ways you can still live your life if we are attacked by terrorists. But if you ain't got any water, you're in deep doo-doo. And the internet is used for everything now. These are things I don't really like to think about. I had a premonition decades ago that I was going to live to be 92. And so that's how I live my life. I just assume I'm going to be here until I'm 92. It's a silly notion to carry around, but this thing came to me in a really, really vivid type dream. And I thought to myself, I'm going with that. And also, to a large extent, I think, you know, if you start thinking old, you get old. I was talking with Eric Mink yesterday, I was saying, and he was just marveling at the fact that I can still play baseball. And, you know, one of the slogans we have in the Men's Senior Baseball League is, you didn't stop playing because you got old. You got old because you stopped playing. Last time I was in St. Louis, I was meeting with my lawyer, and, you know, he's in his 70s now. And we were just talking about the fact that, you know, I know guys who are 40 years old and they act like and they look like they're 20 years older than they are. They're old men already at 40 or 45. And, you know, like 70 pounds overweight. And he was talking about guys who are just barely into their 70s. They're already, you know, like shuffle stepping and everything. It's like, pick up your feet. Come on. I know a lot of people, you know, have serious ailments and they can't walk the right way. I totally understand that. But if you don't have one of those ailments, don't allow yourself to get old beyond your years. You know, I'm not telling you to deny your age. I certainly don't. But there really isn't any point in accelerating it. I remember back in the late 70s, I interviewed for a job in Orlando, Florida. And I came down, and the guy waiting for me was the program director. He's waiting for me at the gate. And he had those metal sticks that he was using to walk. And I finally got around to asking him, and I go, well, you know, didn't you get vaccinated or something? He's like, I was like one of the last kids to qualify and to be old enough to get vaccinated. And the polio hit me before then, and so this is it. 71 years ago today, 1953, Dr. Jonas Salk announced that he had successfully tested a polio vaccine. So for all you anti-vaxxers out there, and I just pray to God there aren't any listening right now, but if there is, I mean, what do you, how do you explain that? You had polio, then you got a vaccine, no fucking polio. It's just to the point now where I just turn and walk away. If I encounter one of these people who doesn't think that vaccines work, doesn't think we landed on the moon, thinks the earth is flat, you know, all that sort of nonsense. Those people seem to be growing in number, and it's really, really weirding me out. All right, let's talk a little sports here. Cardinals busted it open in the seventh against the Cubs in Mesa yesterday. 3 runs on 6 hits. We win at 6-3. This Michael Ciani was in center for the Cards late in the game and made a highlight reel diving catch in the bottom of the seventh. He's only hitting .262, so I don't know what his future with the team could be. Anyhow, they play again this afternoon in Arizona. Kyle Gibson gets the start. Season starts Thursday in L.A. In the second inning, the reason Ciani was playing center field is Dylan Carlson and Jordan Walker collided in right field. Carlson had to come out of the game. He's day-to-day. Shohei Ohtani. Nobody believes him. Held a news conference yesterday, said he never bet on baseball, never instructed anyone to bet on his behalf. He didn't take any questions, which was probably a good thing because nobody believes him. Now, I've talked about this many times before. I'm not a gambler. I don't even do NCAA brackets. I just don't gamble. That's it. But I'll tell you this. I think I know enough about gambling to know that if you're making $300,000 a year, bookies will not give you a couple of $1 million in a line of credit, which tells me that Ohtani knew exactly what was going on. So now the question is, what does Major League Baseball do with baseball's highest paid crown jewel if the investigation says he broke the rules? I was talking with Skip Weber from Weber Chevrolet earlier today, and he was like telling me that, you know, Major League Baseball locker rooms, and I don't ever remember seeing this. All the times I've been in locker rooms, I never noticed it, but, you know, I have no reason to doubt him. But apparently there's a sign on the wall of every Major League Baseball clubhouse that says you get kicked out of baseball permanently if you bet on baseball. So don't fucking do it. So if the investigation indicates that Ohtani was gambling and behind the idea that his interpreter was actually placing the bets, but that Ohtani was behind it, then if rules are rules, you got to kick him out for life. I would not want to be Rob Manfred in this situation. And I worked in the Channel 5 newsroom from 1985 to almost 1991, and it was a real, real professional operation. Had all these producers, all these incredibly talented people, writers, producers, directors. It was just the best of the best. When I was there in the late 80s, you could take the ratings and combine all of the ratings of all of the other stations minus Channel 5, put those ratings together, and it still didn't equal what Channel 5 had. It was incredible and a very, very exciting place. And I had not worked in a TV newsroom prior to that. I had done a reasonable amount of television, and of course I had been on radio for 10 years at that point, so I knew my way around a television studio, but I was very much learning, but I had very, very good teachers. And the beauty of it was, I think that initially, maybe somebody had an idea, let's bring that J.C. Corcoran in, throw him on the air. You know, he's very popular on the radio. Maybe some people will watch. Maybe they'll give a little spike in the ratings. They had no idea that I actually had a brain and that I could actually write and that I actually had some training in journalism and a degree. They didn't even know that. So the first couple of stories I do, I remember one of the producers came to me and said, "You've never worked in a television newsroom before." I said, "No." They're like, "You're a pretty good writer. I think we can make you even a better writer." I was like, "Come on, bring it on. I want to be. I want to be the best I can be at this." And so, unlike what I see a lot of people doing these days, like when I worked at the All Sports Station, I'd never seen more inflated egos in my life. Everybody was running around acting like they invented radio. These guys in their like early 20s acting like they've been in the business for 50 years. It's like, that's not how you do that. "Oh, JC's going to come in here and start causing trouble." It's like, well, no, that's not it at all. Let me use myself as an example. The first couple of gigs I got in media, I was like a sponge. I just absorbed everything. I asked questions constantly. I wanted to know the right way to do things. And like I said, I was fortunate because at that time, there were really, really smart, really, really talented people that were running the place. And so I learned everything I could learn. Now, people walk in and they're trying to tell you everything that they know. That's not how it worked when I was there. So I worked there for 5 years during the heyday. And then there was a goofy situation where a new news director came in, and this guy was a fucking squirrel, and he didn't understand who I was or why I was there. And one day he was just like, "I'm cutting this guy." I still remember I was putting all my stuff in a box, and the general manager came downstairs into the newsroom. He didn't come down often, but he'd come down once in a while and walk past the bulletin board that had the announcement that JC Corcoran was leaving News Channel 5. And he just turned and looked at the newsman and said, "Well, that was really stupid." But, you know, the way you get the reputation for being a bad manager is when you micromanage. And so even though Bill Bolster, who was the general manager at the time, disagreed with the move by his news director, he still went along with it because I'm not the kind of guy who was going to overrule something that the news director did. So I sat out for about 6 months and then was approached by Channel 4. And I went to work there and ended up working there for, 7 years? And a couple of years into the gig, 1993. So it wasn't even a couple of years. It was like a year into my time there. The news director left, brought in a new guy I'd never heard of before. And this guy, where do I start? You know, after you talk to somebody for the very first time and you think to yourself, this guy's fucking loony. And that was my reaction. And this guy was trying to reinvent the wheel, and it seemed like his sights were on all the wrong things. Like, he didn't like the color of the graphics on the TV station, so he made him change. He was the one that started all this stuff about, you know, you're watching about 5 minutes into the newscast, and we have a story coming up about such and such and such and such, and we'll have that for you at 10:17. And we'll be back in 60 seconds. You know, that kind of crap. All this, trying to game the system, because the way the ratings are taken in TV and radio, what you do and what, you know, how you do it at what particular time in the hour can have a dramatic effect on the ratings. If you're ever sitting there with the remote control and you're punching around, it's like they're all doing weather at exactly the same time. They're all doing sports at exactly the same time. There's a reason for that. And it has to do with the way the ratings services give credit for what's called a quarter hour share. And if I continue on this, I'm going to be talking over your heads, and that's not the point of any of this. But they spent a lot of time gaming the system, or trying to, instead of focusing on doing the news better. I don't know. And like I said, they were, they were looking for big splashes, big flashy things. Now, many of you have lived in the St. Louis area for many, many years, many, many decades, know that there's been a long-standing problem over in Metro East regarding one particular religious group and its affinity for the abuse of children, accusations of sexual abuse. It's a lot of really, really fun stuff like that. So they decide, we got the Adams Mark Hotel directly across the street from One Memorial Drive. Let's put a camera up there, like on the 20th floor of the One Memorial Drive building, and then we rent a particular hotel room that is facing the Channel 4 building so that camera will just shoot right across the plaza and maybe 30 yards and we'll bug the room ahead of time. We'll put a microphone in the room, hide it under the clock radio or something, and then we're going to bring one of these priests in, and we're going to hire a male prostitute, and we'll have video because we're going to shoot across the plaza from one building to the other, and we'll get all the audio because you got the microphone hidden in the room. My God, we're going to win awards for this. It's going to be unbelievable. Well, it was unbelievable, okay, because somebody found out about it, and then people started backpedaling, and then the wrong people found out about it. The story, needless to say, never aired, but everybody started getting fired. And I might add, for good reason. And a couple of people became sacrificial lambs. The TV station had to air all of these, you know, public statements from the general manager apologizing for what they did. They had to fork over a lot of money to the archdiocese over there in Metro East to get them off their backs. You know, it's interesting because in their weaker moments, I have had conversations with people who run radio stations. And they don't have a very high view of the people who work at the radio stations, particularly the people who are on the air. They think we're all head cases. They think we're all drug maniacs. They think, you know, we have lousy credit and unpaid bills and child support payments not getting made. And we're just drunk all the time. And, you know, we fall down and spend the night in a park somewhere asleep on a bench. The truth of the matter is some of the weirdest, most flawed people I have ever known are people who run radio and TV stations. We might be eccentric. We might have our little quirks. We might be anti-establishment, but we're not nuts. And how old is William Shatner today? Let me just look this up real quick. I can't find it. I think he's 94 years old. He says the secret to his longevity is staying engaged in life. If you've seen him lately, you can tell it's certainly not diet and exercise. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran Podcast for Tuesday, March 26, 2024 is in the can. We're here every Monday through Thursday at 11 at jconline.com with 30 minutes of free stuff. And then we pop back up on the radio station every weekday morning from 6 until 10 at 101.5 St. Louis, 101.7 out west, and streaming at kwolf.com. Have a great day today. Baseball season starts in 2 days. And in the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.